Save the date for .NET Conf 2020, happening this year on November 10th through 12th. With this year being our 10th anniversary, there'll be tons of great announcements like the launch of .NET 5, and we'll also have some surprise guests too. So please make sure you check us out for this free 3-day virtual developer event where you'll see live sessions from the .NET community as well as various product teams. Head over to .NETconf.net to learn more and tune in. In this episode of the On.NET Show, we're going to learn how to build GraphQL applications using a really interesting project called Hot Chocolate. So sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy it. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the On.NET Show. My name is Cecil Phillip, and today we have a very special guest, Michael, who's going to talk to us about building applications with hot chocolate. So Michael, why don't you introduce yourself really quickly and let everyone know who you are and what exactly do you do?
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm Michael Stipe. I'm a Microsoft MVP, and I'm one of the authors of the Hot Chocolate GraphQL library for .NET. And as you already heard, it's about GraphQL. And we started originally 3 years ago to bring a better experience to .NET with GraphQL.
Nice. So why don't we take just a really quick moment to explain what exactly GraphQL is? Because I know there's a lot of talk about it, but everyone may not know exactly what GraphQL does or what it's for.
Great. Okay, let's head right into it. So first, you don't have to take notes. I have put all the demos and slides right behind this link. So just go there and you will find the GitHub repository with everything you need. So what is GraphQL? GraphQL was originally developed by Facebook to fix their data fetching needs that they had with no mobile applications. So if we look at this initial GraphQL query here, it basically asks the server to fetch the currently signed in user, and from this currently signed in user, the name. And if we send that to our GraphQL server, we will get a response that closely aligns our query request. It almost looks like the GraphQL server fills our request up with data. And as we go along and change our use cases or need more or less data, we just go and change our request. And if we look at this request here, we can already see that it's not only about simple sparse fields, it's about data trees. And this allows us basically to drill into relations. And drilling into relations really allows us to push back the data aggregations to the server side. And this puts us as the consumer of a GraphQL API in control. But if we look at this request here, we can also see some repetitions. And with GraphQL, we have a concept called fragments. And fragments basically are the primitives of composition in GraphQL, which allow us to build fragment hierarchies as we build component hierarchies in our UIs or class hierarchies in our servers. Okay, just as a quick recap, with GraphQL, we have one endpoint to fetch our data, and you can fetch all the data in one request. And that really gets rid of the overall underfetching problem. And GraphQL built on a strong type system. And this really lets us predictably use our endpoints. We, as the consumer of a GraphQL endpoint, can trust that if the server says this is a string field, it will always be a string field. Okay, so this is a 3 minutes introduction to GraphQL. There's much more to explain, but I think it's better to head in, or?
Yeah, that was a really good introduction. And you know, I've heard a lot about GraphQL in the past. Like, I've written RESTful APIs or HTTP-based APIs with gets and puts and posts and things like that. And kind of looking at the example you showed, GraphQL kind of looks like JSON without the semicolons and the quotes around them a little bit.
Yeah, that's why often when people start with it and they mistake it for JSON. And that's why the analogy quite well works, that you send in like an empty JSON graph and get the filled up JSON graph back.
Right, right. So why don't we talk now about hot chocolate? right? Now, hot chocolate, from my understanding, is a implementation of GraphQL or a framework for writing GraphQL servers with .NET Core, right? Or ASP.NET Core. So yes. Why don't you start with, why exactly did you decide to make this framework?
Yeah, when we started actually on the project to integrate GraphQL, we tried out a lot of frameworks that were around, but they didn't feel easy and they were not as powerful as we needed back in the time. And so at one Christmas Eve, I sat down and started writing the parser and thought I would be finished in 2 weeks, but it took over a year. But essentially, that was the starting of Hot Chocolate. And then other contributors chimed in, and now there are lots of people contributing to this project.
Okay. So when you look at GraphQL, would you consider it to be something that you could use alongside of RESTful services, or do you think it's something that you could do instead of RESTful services? Like, how do we kind of position that?
So there is a lot of gray area. So not every service has to be a GraphQL server. You have cases where you can opt for REST or where gRPC might make sense. But GraphQL is very strong where you have structured data, where you have relations. Like, for instance, Netflix uses GraphQL, but they are using it for the data, not for streaming movies. So you have to have something where you have a lot of relational data. Otherwise, it might not make sense.
Got it. Okay. So I have a feeling I'm going to have a lot more questions for you, but why don't we take a look at a demo and see how exactly we could get started with using Hot Chocolate?
Okay. Let's head over here. So I already prepared a small demo, and this is basically an empty ASP.NET Core project. So if you do .NET Web New, you basically get this. And we already are running .NET 5, and we put in the Hot Chocolate ASP.NET Core package. This is basically the only modification that I did here.
Okay.
Okay, so every GraphQL server starts with a root type. And the only root type that is obligatory is the query root type. So without a query type, you don't have a GraphQL server. But in order to have something to that works, some data, let's create, for instance, a book type. So I'm creating a class called book. And then we just add some content here. So basically, we are building a simple class here, book, which has a title and an author, both string. Let's just start with that. And then we are adding another class, query. Okay, so we're creating a query type here. And let me just add the query content. And this is a simple C# class. And we just have here a method which essentially creates a new book instance that we just created. And we have a title here, C# in dev, and it's John Skeet. And this is called actually a resolver. So Hot Chocolate will just infer from this class the query root type and from this the resolvers that we have on root types. We will see what they are about. So next, let's go to the startup CS to set everything up. Because as of now, we just created a bunch of classes. So in order to make it a GraphQL schema, we are going to our service collection and are saying add a GraphQL server. And then we chain in our GraphQL server configuration. In this instance, we say add query type and say query here. And we are done. We have a valid GraphQL schema. But there's nothing that executes GraphQL yet. So let's go here to the endpoints API and use the map GraphQL extension method to add basically the GraphQL middleware. And with that, we have a valid GraphQL server. Let's run it. It's coming up. OK, so we have a URL here, which is localhost 5000. Let's open Edge and put that in. And GraphQL by default is on the GraphQL endpoint. Let me type that in. And we are getting now GraphQL IDE that is also built by us. It's called Banana Cake Pop. We have lots of food names. And this helps me to basically fetch data from my GraphQL server or explore the schema. In order to explore our schema that we just built, we can click on this book item here. And just let me refetch the schema because I already used it in the browser and there was an old schema here already preloaded. So now we have our schema that we just have built and we can see that we have a book field here. So I can click on that and then I can explore what the book type is about. Like I have a title and an author. This exclamation mark here means that this field never returns null. It's a non-nullable string. Okay, let's go back to our query. So this is the area where I can type a GraphQL query. And I just can start with these squiggles. And then I can select via IntelliSense from the fields that are available. And I basically can drill into my book, for instance, just fetch the title. Let's fetch that, and we can see I get our book.
Oh, that's really cool. So out of the box, you have almost like an intelligent autocomplete, right? You know, you've run the server that you're running locally in your machine, but it's now picking up that that schema based on what you set up inside of that inside of your configure services, right?
Exactly. Or inside of your
configure method.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. all the non-nullability information that we see here is actually coming right from C#. So when you paid attention at the beginning, I set this nullable enable here. And basically now the schema will pick that up and translate that into GraphQL non-nullables, wherever I don't put a question mark, like here's no question mark, so it's non-nullable.
Nice. Now, my other question for you would be, just really quickly, you're using a pretty straightforward example. Like you have a book type and you're returning a query from a book type. What happens if I had multiple types? What if I had like books and authors and publishers and tons of things like that?
That's a good question. And that's basically where we head into our second demo. So let me switch gears here.
Okay.
And let's go to our second demo. And then we take that a little bit further.
I also really like that banana cake pop thing. Like I'm really interested.
Yeah, it's built on Monaco, so it's built on the VS Code core, and we have it as application. So basically, you can have it as an Electron application or as a middleware.
Nice.
Okay, so the next thing is we're taking it a bit further. So let's create a proper database model with Entity Framework. So in this, we have basically a book type. And we have keys associated, and we have the author here. And the author is its own entity, which again has a collection of books. Okay, and then we have a standard DB context here with some setup about the relations and how you would basically do entity framework. Okay, so at the moment, we have just a simple get book resolver, almost like in our first example here. So we are essentially getting C# in depth and John Skeet. So how do we make this load proper data out of the database and maybe multiple books and stuff like that? So let's first set up our entity framework here. So we just say add a DB context. And we are using a pool DB context because in GraphQL, each resolver is executed independently if you're doing queries, which means that we potentially have multiple threads fetching data or asking for data. And since Entity Framework doesn't support multiple threads on one context, we're using a pooled DB context factory, which is brand new with .NET 5. And it basically allows us to reuse DB context and use multiple at a time. Okay, so let's go back to our query type and build that all in. So the first thing, let's just write what we want. We want a queryable of book because that is our, let's say, our list of books.
Okay.
And then we call that get books. And so that we get the DB context as we wanted, we just write in our argument or parameter here, book context. And that essentially tells our query engine that we need something injected here, some book context. OK, let's roll with it for now. So then we say context books, I think. And now let's put some attributes on here. So Hot Chocolate can be used with attributes or the affluent API or even with schema first. There's essentially three approaches in the GraphQL world to define schemas. Today, I'm just using the attribute version. So the first thing is we need a DB context. So we tell our engine that we need a DB context and that we need the book context. Next, it would be nice if we could query it a bit. So let's put something on that is called filtering. This will allow us to filter through the books. We will see what it really does in a second. And just for good measure, let's also sort, add some sorting capabilities. Last but not least, we have something that is called use projections. And this really allows me to rewrite the incoming GraphQL query into an expression tree that is applied on the DB context and automatically translated into SQL. Let's see what that is about. So last but not least, we tell our engine that this is actually a scoped service, so a field scoped service that is basically coming from here. OK, let's just run that.
And I had a quick question about that too, like while you go ahead and run it. So can I assume that the attributes that you're putting in, that Hot Chocolate is very opt-in and not opt-out? So like you have to opt into those features. So if I don't put those attributes on, I'm not going to have filtering, I'm not going to have sorting, but I have to add them very explicitly.
Yes, you have to opt in to all the things that you want. And these are actually all middlewares. And we allow middlewares in a Fluent API, but also in an attribute package. I think of these as little packages that pack a lot of configuration code in them. And just I forgot one thing, like it's really opt-in. So I also have to tell my schema engine that I really want to have filtering support. And why do I need to do that? Because we support pretty much everything that you can query from Elasticsearch to OData to other source formats. And by default, if I just write add filtering, add sorting, it supports like variable. So let's put in here add projection and then let's rerun that.
Okay. So you're saying I have to add those in both places? So I have to add it in the function as well as in my startup.cs file?
Yes. And I explain that in a second why that is so.
Okay.
Just let's refetch our schema. So what we can see here now is that we have a books list basically here, a non-nullable books list. We can see that author is here. So we see our query, our schema builder already crawled the type graph and compiled a proper schema from it. So I can explore now my schema very properly. What I also can see, okay, book is now wrong. So I can opt in here. I have now arguments on my field, where and order. And where allows me to maybe query for specific books. Like I could ask for the author and for the author's name. And maybe the name should contain John. OK, so we could just query that. And then I get back to the question that you had. So I query that. You can see it pulls some data. Now we have the C# second edition, third edition, and whatever he wrote. But I also can see that it has basically rewritten the GraphQL query in one single SQL command.
Nice.
OK. So why do I put these in? So on my resolvers, I just say I want projections here, or I want filtering here. And in the main configuration, I basically can set them up like if I just add filtering here, I add filtering support for Queryable. But I also could opt into more here and refine these filter conventions to support other things. Like I want to put in spatial filter support. I want to put in support for MongoDB querying or OData querying. Then I can configure that here.
Got it. Okay, so that's great. So that means that regardless of whatever my backend is, you know, I should have some type of support for querying not only just Entity Framework, but I could query anything that supports iQueryable, iEnumerable, and like various other types of data. So
yes.
Even if I had something that was attached to like a key value store or a document database or a relational database, I could put hot chocolate on top of it to get some GraphQL support.
Exactly. Yeah, there's lots of possible, even there are other things that go then beyond like schema stitching, but they are more advanced topics.
Okay, great. So Michael, this has been a really good introduction. We're definitely going to have you do some more videos and talk about some more of the in-depth features of Hot Chocolate. For folks that are interested, like they can definitely go and check out the website. You also have the you have the GitHub repo with, you know, and you folks can submit issues and things of that nature. I know you also have a lot of talks in YouTube as well talking about Hot Chocolate. So,
yes.
You know, there are tons of opportunities for folks to go in and try it out. So so thank you for coming on and letting us know about it. Thank all of you for watching. And this has been another episode of the On.NET Show where we learned about how we can get started doing GraphQL with Hot Chocolate.